What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Rockcast. Jordan here, your host. And today I have a super fun episode. I have my longtime friend Jamie Dykeman on. Jamie was from Ohio. She moved out west and worked on a ranch in Wyoming for a while and then found herself in Nebraska, where she married her husband and where they live now. She's currently a teacher, but when I met her, she was working for a large company, very well-known company, and in the product and product development and things like that. So today on this episode, we're going to talk about that, product development and such, and kind of how we got to know each other and how we work together. So this is going to be a super fun episode. But first, I just wanted to thank our sponsor, Onyx Hunt Maps, for powering the podcast and making this whole thing go around. And yeah, we just really appreciate them. So if you go to onxmaps.com/hunt, you can get one of the memberships, enter code ROCKCAST, ROKCAST at checkout, get 20% off on us. And yeah, it's this is gonna be a great episode. I hope you guys like it. What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the ROCKCAST. Jordan here, and today we have my friend, longtime friend, Jamie Dykeman on, and we're going to talk product development.
Yes.
Yes. Thanks for taking the time on this nice Sunday afternoon to or morning, I guess.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to talk product with you and everyone. So as Jordan said, my name's Jamie Dykeman. I am originally from Columbus, Ohio, so I never grew up in the hunting lifestyle until I moved out to Nebraska, the simple life in Nebraska. And I guess my hunting career, I've been hunting now for close to 10 years, but like I said, I never grew up in it. It was my husband who was the reason why I got into hunting and now opened a door to a new part of my life that I really couldn't imagine my life without the outdoors. So yeah. A lot of the type of hunting we do is mostly bow hunting. Used to compete a lot in archery as well. And I'm also a recreational shooter. So kind of a nerd with pistol shooting and three gun stuff too. But, so yeah, life brought me out to Nebraska, got married and had to find really a job out here in the middle of nowhere. So yes. My background, at least in product development, was with a, trying to think of how to say this.
It's a large outdoor. Reputable?
Yeah. A large outdoor company, I guess. And I started with them, as really a distribution person, packing boxes of product for people. Mm-hmm. And then, grew up the corporate ladder, had experience within customer relations and product information. Definitely worked in merchandising, some marketing, but most of my background within the outdoor industry or corporate life was product development. And specifically, I was part of the team that helped develop really any shooting products, any hunting products, and also optics. So I'm sure we'll get into talking about optics because I'm a huge optics nerd, but that's most of my background with the outdoor industry and specifically product development.
And that's how we met.
Yes.
Yeah. We kind of met through like a mutual friend that I went to college with, that is super good friends with your husband. And so that's kind of how we met and then started off on the product stuff. And we didn't really do that much, I don't think.
No, that's and I'm sure we'll talk about really building product and things that work and don't work, but, how we touch base was I was in the process of helping build authentic women's hunting apparel. So the first step was really to find some legit women that we could incorporate and talk to and help build truly authentic products. So that's where I got your name. And of course, J-Bud, you're pretty legit. So that's really how that started. But I'm trying to think of really the experience that we had within that was talking through product strategy and really what was needed. Within the industry. And then life kind of changed.
Life did change. Yeah.
It changed. Yep.
But yeah, let's just dive right into the product development. I think that like, you know, I look at products that people are coming out with now and how harsh people can be about them or about it on forums and stuff like that. And I thought that if we talked about how products come to life and like that whole deal, maybe it would just give some more knowledge, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe like why what sometimes what people want is like so hard to do, or I don't know if that makes any sense.
It does. Yeah, there's a lot to the process. So yeah, we can definitely dive in really. And I guess what really makes a product successful in my mind is starting off right, meaning identifying an opportunity, whether that be through innovation or whether that be through an industry gap that you feel like you mm-hmm. can do well and fill the void. But it has to be problem solving. It can't just be a product that's like, you know, some guy or gal's like, that would be cool to have, but really nothing behind it. Because then when you get to the marketing side and you don't have that why or that reason, it's really hard to mm-hmm. tell the customer like, oh, we built this because it felt like it versus we built this because we did our due diligence and really identified this is something that we need in hunters or outdoor enthusiasts need.
Yeah. So when, especially, well, maybe it doesn't even matter. Who was coming up with most of those ideas? Like, was it a lot of customer feedback, or was it like you guys had such a good core, you know, group of people in there?
A lot of it was through merchandising at the time, but, and you had people that were, we call them end users, that were really passionate about the outdoors, but what was missing was a lot of the product strategy. And that's where we came into play. Like the product development team really evolved into partnering very closely with merchandising and with marketing and customer relations and really identifying what we need and then making sure that it's one, feasible, mm-hmm. that it's a product that we can make money on. But more importantly, like, I mean, business talk, yes, you need to make money off of it or else you shouldn't make it.
Right.
But you're going to be super successful if you make it with truly an authentic reason.
And I think that that's where some things that I've seen fall short, maybe, is there's no, the people designing it or building it aren't going to be the end user.
Yeah.
Or they don't understand it. Yeah.
Yep. That can happen too. And I'll just say specifically within hunting apparel, there weren't very many women that were helping design that.
Yeah.
It just didn't really know that that's like, hey, you can actually utilize people a lot more effectively. And they, you know, they did start doing that, to be honest, our interaction was one of the first mm-hmm. and like where we had a committee of women that really dove into, should we do this? Is this something you guys would use? Tell us what you need, you know? So they were definitely open to that, but it took some time because there weren't very many women in the positions of power mm-hmm. to be able to make those decisions. So it was really influencing a lot of leadership and influencing those people in those roles to take into account, hey, let's step outside our own personal agenda and figure out what our people need, what our customers need.
Yeah, I remember a specific conversation about some pants and whether they needed suspenders or not and where, how they were going to attach and all that stuff. But yeah,
very detailed.
Yeah, it was. It was fun.
But then you have like, it truly is, you can tell some products that definitely didn't have any input from women. Like, don't get me wrong, like we definitely like to look good, but I think functionality is something that's super important to us as well.
Yeah.
And it took a little bit for some companies, even some brands specifically to do it well. And I'm sure you'll hear me talk about the Sitka Train, but I mean, they did it so well mm-hmm. and it happened to be at the same time that you and I were trying to do that as well, you know, like, and at that time it didn't matter who did it, just somebody do it and somebody do it well, you know, instead of having like yoga pants, like camo yoga pants, like actually have stuff that can, you know, withstand being out in the elements and are can layer well and are warm and useful. Like, so it definitely was a journey over time. But I'd say right now products specifically for women have definitely been, truly focused on women. I think that's what's helped with their success.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was a very funny journey looking back, especially. We can laugh about it forever. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting. There was like some input of people that really didn't need to have input of like making sure it had pink on it and freaking weird blue and like.
Yeah, yeah, you're always going to have that. Those people.
Nuts.
Yeah, and that's where it took a while for people and. And I don't want to say just men, but I think just people that have been in the role for so long that they thought that women really didn't need anything different. And hey, let's be efficient with some minimums that we already have of men's and just throw a color pop on it and call it women's. And there was a lot of products out, you know, not just throughout that building or that company or that brand. I mean, that the whole industry was full of products like that.
Yeah.
And still there are some that way. And I think it was more of a business efficiency versus a authentic, hey, this is truly built for women and here's why, instead of here's a cool color.
So with that, if I don't know whether to use a product as an example, but do you want to give kind of a 10,000 foot view of like, if I come to you and say, hey, this thing sounds like a good idea, like what does that look like to build?
Yeah. So to build a product, and it's like, I'll say specifically within hard goods, that would be like more hunting gear besides hunting apparel or optics or, even shooting products, but it can take from anywhere from a year and a half to 2 years and even longer with some, especially within optics. But where it starts is a lot of research. A lot of consumer research, a lot of industry research, and really, and even some customer feedback of, man, I wish that you guys had this, or man, I wish that this existed, and taking all that into account in the first process, which is really the strategic chunk of the product development calendar. So the strategy part is really trying to identify where's areas that we can bring a product that is problem solving. And then the second part is, then how can you make money off of it, right? And that really goes into account the manufacturing side, or really the partnership between logistics and those factories that make the product, where they're at location-wise, geographically. That takes into account a lot of costing, takes into account a lot of timing to be able to develop it right. And once like you hit these checkpoints, like if you don't hit that checkpoint well, like in the beginning where it's like, can we make money? And if the answer is no, you don't move on. You know what I mean? Like, should we build this, or is this customer, you know, problem solving product? If it's no, you shouldn't move on. Like, so these checkpoints within the product development cycle or within that calendar is definitely the strategic part. And then partnering, you know, once identified, there's an opportunity, partnering with a manufacturer that can build that product at a good quality. And then once pricing and all that is really, really done, then you start getting into prototyping. But developing the prototyping calendar within the whole time frame is probably one of the most difficult parts, because it's really hard just to build a one-off thing. And usually you probably get anywhere from 3 to 4 samples before you're like ready and it come off of the production line. With optics, that's a little bit harder because you can't really just have all these prototype samples. That can become super expensive. But having enough time where you have a prototype that's actually of the right materials and enough to where you can get in the field and test it, that's essential. And a lot of times, like, it's super hard to build that time frame in without it taking forever to make this product. Like, speed to market is the biggest thing too. Not only are you trying to solve, you know, a customer problem with this product, not only are you trying to build it fast, but you're also trying to build it at good quality and make money off of it. Like, there's so much that goes into play. But once you get prototyping and get it in the hands of authentic people that can really test it, provide quick feedback, like, that is their job. We finally got this, you know, product, go get it out in the field. Here's your time frame to do it. Get us feedback back. That's also alignment with good partners too. And then having, and if you do it well, obviously there should only be very minimal changes at that time. And then once, you know, the production line starts and you get it off there, then it's that execution stage. And the execution stage is everything that'll, like, where a lot of people do not think about It really incorporates marketing. It incorporates how do we tell this story of this product to the customers. And if you don't do that well, a customer's not going to know what it is, yeah. You know? So that was where within our team, we spent a lot of time with that upfront process of, you know, the strategic input and identifying really what product we should do and how we can make, you know, a decent profit off of it. And then holding accountability to that time frame, but then also the execution side is truly a lot of collaboration and partnership with marketing teams, with a lot of customer service teams. So when people call in or when this is on the shelf or on the internet, you have all the right product information, the stuff that's super important for the customer to determine their buying decision and really get that awareness out for that product.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So maybe let's talk about the quality when you're looking for
it's huge.
how do you do that
so you know? There are specific teams that their sole job is to hold accountability within quality, and very closely they were partnered within the product development team. So that was nice to where QA for my experiences did a great job where they already had an idea too from a material standpoint. Mm-hmm. Those are the specialists of what, you know, materials are good. As far as like, if you're looking for materials that are quiet, looking for some that are more durable, looking for more synthetic stuff or new stuff, everything down to the zippers and to the buckles, like all that mm-hmm. has to be super important as far as like, it has to be high quality, and you can't have like things that don't make sense, like Velcro on a bow hunting thing, or you know what I mean? Like it just truly has to make sense. And holding that accountability through the QA process is huge. And a lot of times, if you do it well, QA should have enough power to say, no, this isn't moving forward. Or if something's wrong, you know what I mean? Like, and a lot of times that's hard. That's hard when you have a lot of upfront investment. And, you know, not saying that it's a huge deal breaker, but something that maybe doesn't hit the expectation that it should within the product development cycle, it really shouldn't be moving on. But then that's why, you know, sometimes it could be too late and it's then a second run, you know, of that improvement. It really has to be something that is like super, super bad, like a product's going to blow up or, or something to kick it off of that. Yeah. Or a safety hazard for it to be like, yeah, that's not getting in front of the customers. But QA is huge. Is very important within the process.
Yeah, because I feel like that's where some products could fall short, is like your Velcro example on a bow hunting piece. You know, if it's like, okay, we need our cusps or whatever, we need to be able to move this. Well, Velcro sticks good. Like, we'll just put Velcro on it. And it's like, there could be better ways to do that. Like, that's where I see some products fall short if they do, is like the materials that they use could not be the greatest.
Yeah. And that's where like it would just paying attention to detail and really understanding the concept of form and function. Like I'm a nerd with that. I'm a huge science nerd. So this product development like really aligned well in my mind, because that form and function is very similar to science. And I don't know if I didn't mention, like, I am a science teacher now.
So, yes.
Yeah. So life has definitely changed from the outdoor industry to teaching middle school and high school science. But this passion for product is very similar, though, for this concept of form and function, meaning this part is built for this specific reason. So, for instance, like, you know, a cuff where, you know, even the length of it and how that adjustment is, or that attachment is, if it's not built well, it's not going to function well. Yeah. So really having the details of those things that are purposeful and form and function within the design, you know, element of it, that's super important. And a lot of times you're just so focused on getting that product out there that that's missed. One thing that I'm truly proud of, some products that I helped with was the hunting packs. And there was a lot of things that went into that as far as the brand was very known for their hunting packs, but the assortment got so big that you almost had these pieces that were cannibalizing each other. Like the strategy was out the window. You have 20 some SKUs that And, you know, nothing that was really, this is for this purpose, this is for this reason. Instead, it was like, here's a hodgepodge of a whole bunch of different packs. But a lot of customer feedback was like, why is this strap so long? Why is this missing this? I wish this wasn't Velcro. I wish it was more this. So it's like we dove into totally prioritizing the customer, what they wanted with Honey Packs, and narrowed down that assortment to, I think maybe it was like 8 different styles, and really focused on that form and function and those small improvements that made a huge difference.
Yeah, each had a purpose. When you're looking at customer feedback, are you guys looking at reviews, or were you looking at reviews like online? So that stuff matters, people.
It does. Yes. Pretty much a lot of the intel that we used within the product development cycle specifically for that project was reviews that were posted online. And, you know, we do have access to a lot of the customer feedback through, you know, calls and stuff.
Yeah.
But the reviews were huge. Yes. That they really matter, not just for people and trying to figure out what they need to purchase, but from the product development standpoint. Yes. Yes. Those are definitely taken into account and essential.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was just thinking is, you know, next time you write a review, we always look at it as like, I look at the reviews to, you know, see how other people, what other people think about it. But if you can put a little bit more, if there's something that you're given like 3 or 4 stars that could be a 5, like put a little bit more input into that review because the company is going to be looking at it and they might actually. Yeah. So that's just a little, I think, tip to people is like that stuff matters. And that's probably one of the better ways to get your voice heard.
Yep. Yep. It sure is.
Sweet. Let's see. So moving on to like products specifically designed for women. Do you think we went through that? Okay. Just the product development. Yeah.
Yeah. I did want to, call out a little bit of Sitka. Like
that's where I was just going. Like, let's just dive into your role in that.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't have much, I'm not going to claim at all much of a role in that. It just happened to be the same time frame that you and I were connecting, trying to develop authentic women's hunting apparel, that Sitka did it and did it amazingly. And still to this day, like, does it so well. So one thing that like, I am super, I'm like very brand loyal. And I think especially with people that are listening to this podcast are the same way. Like if you win me out of the gate, like it's going to be really hard to lose me. So that's where brand loyalty is super important. And I think it just comes to authenticity. Like I know from behind the scenes with the women's hunting apparel line in Sitka, it was done authentically. And what I mean by that is they took into account legit women, just like you and I were trying to do, like legit women. Still, those women are part of that line, and making tweaks and making it beneficial for women. And it was not just a, hey, we're going to dabble in it. Like a lot of times brands just like, you know, dip their toe in the market. We're just going to like launch like 2 products and see how it does. Like they fully committed to a full line where like no one was doing that. Everyone was, I don't want to say too scared, but just like it was uncharted territory to target or provide products for women at that level, because that was the higher quality. That was a very small, don't get me wrong, a very small population size and percentage of customers there, but they went at it authentically and just dove right in. And I mean, still to this day, I love Sitka just because of that story. I think their products are, the materials are great. I think that they really put a lot of time into small things like their Fanatic hoodie is like one of my favorite products ever. Just with the built-in, you know, face deal with the hand. Like this morning I was freezing while we were turkey hunting and I had that on and the little mitts that you can fold over your hands. It's like, yes. Like, like just the little things that like, you're like, thank you guys. Like, I truly appreciate you thought about that. You know, I'd say what's really hard though, like, and especially with me, I invested in their product, which is great because I use it all the time, but I'm not really able to buy any more of their product nowadays because my income definitely changed being an educator. but don't get me wrong, like their stuff is truly awesome product. They did it really well.
Yeah, one of the messages that they put out when they did that that I really liked was the, you know, I don't know if they have the, do they have the mountain pant for women now? I'm not even sure. I know they had the Timberline, but it was called the Timberline.
The Timberline, yeah.
And it was called the women's Timberline. Same thing as the men's. And they're like, the girls don't want anything different. They just want the fit different. They just want to not have like a super long crotch, basically.
Right.
And yes. Like,
which is essential for, like, that yes. sucks having pants that are like, you know, up to your belly button. You're like, I'm not. Okay.
Yeah, cool. I know. Or if you have them like regularly on your hips, it's just like a train wreck. So it like that was one of the things that I really liked that they did, was they basically took a product that they already had and they just made the fit a little bit different to fit women's bodies.
Right.
You know, a little bit better.
No color pop. You literally can't even tell that it's a woman's product, mm-hmm. which is, to your point, super nice. Like they literally took the men's one, but made it specifically for women within their cut.
Yeah. And, you know, like some other companies have been coming out with stuff like First Light. I wear First Light and they've been coming out with a lot of women's stuff that's really well done and some extra thought into things, even like putting a little bit of extra insulation in their puffy jackets for women in certain places and things like that. So, like, they're coming a ways, you know. But, yeah, Sitka Base, you know, they definitely plowed that trail.
Yeah. Yep. What I like about First Light too, and similar with this Sitka, is their materials. They pick really high-end materials, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty important. Important. And always trying to make them better too, you know?
Yep. What's your thoughts being a bow hunter as well, as far as women-specific bows?
I don't pay any attention to them. Similar to women's specific I just don't pay attention to it.
So I'm in the process of upgrading my bow. I've still had that same bow for the past like 8 years.
Yeah. You love it though. So
I love it. I love it. And then I shot, some of the Matthews and I was like, oh, this is what let off feels like. It was super nice. And I'm debating with the Prima, because I was like, oh, it's a women's bow and it's fast. Like I'm a speed person and there has to be definitely some, I want to say like product manufacturing that's specific for women, especially with efficiency of energy, probably just going to get a whole line of different bows and just shoot to see what's the fastest. Like I'm more looking for speed than comfort. And the Prima, you know, they claim it's super fast, but if they're able, and this is kind of what I want to test, is if they're able to truly develop a cam system that can incorporate lower draw lengths and lower draw weights, but make it just as efficient, like that to me then feels like it is women specific, because that is a consumer that most of the time can't draw that 60 pounds and has a 28 inch draw length like you, you know, like, so targeting, you know, that consumer or women that are in the, you know, mid 20s draw length and mid 40s to mid 50s draw weight, but can still get the same energy as somebody who does have a very long draw weight, or high draw weight and draw length like that, to me, I feel like is women specific.
I like it. I think that, I guess changing draw length really isn't that tough, especially with a lot of those cam systems now that you can change draw length so easily. But it's the weight. I think that's the biggest thing, especially when you're just first starting out. I think that's the, man, there's some of those bows that they do make it. Can't you turn like one of those kit bows or whatever that you can get at box stores? Can't you turn that thing from like 40 pounds to 70 or something?
Oh, it's even less than that. It can be down, I think, into the mid 20s all the way up to 70.
Yeah, but I think that's where your efficiency, right, goes out the window.
Yeah,
when you
like
turn it all the way down.
Yeah, that definitely feels different than a bow that's more built for a specific draw weight. And I think, I mean, Matthews has definitely you know, included a lot of newer technology and innovation within, I think they're called the Rock Mods or the mods that like Gary would go downstairs and switch it out and be able mm-hmm. to change so much draw weight without having to press the button. Like just it's super efficient, but it's really what I'm looking for is, I mean, I'm not going to be able to pull very much weight, mm-hmm. But want though that energy, you know, don't we all, right? But I think yeah. though that there are companies like Matthews that have tried focusing on more performance within the CAM system that can target women who have that lower draw weight.
Lower draw weights and such, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I'd say definitely clothing though is very noticeable within women specific stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, like the backpack thing, there was a company that tried to come out with a women's specific backpack too. And there's some of that stuff I understand. In that case, I thought that they were trying to just make it a marketing thing. Like it was the same damn backpack and they were just trying to market it to women. With things like, I think they said that the frame sheet was thinner, so it was lighter, and there were some things that they lightened up. Well, I don't want to be able to lighten any of that stuff up because that's going to affect durability, I think, with a lot of weight in it.
Yep. But I think with torso adjustment, too, could be women specific, but I think most of the packs out there anyway have that adjustment.
Torso adjustment.
I don't know. I've never really used a women's specific pack, but again, if it goes, if they really do well with the form and function part of that, then that's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I should probably give them a little bit more credit for at least trying, but some of
just
that
got to remember you're an oddball, Jordan, like, and there's nothing wrong with that. Embrace it. Like,
I know that's the thing is like, I love helping people and like, being especially like in the women's world, like somebody people can ask, but it is true. Like I am not, if you're 5'2" and you're struggling finding women's clothing, I'm like 5'10" and not the greatest person to ask because some pants just fit me well. I'm like, yeah, I would just get the men's pants in that version. They're like, well, I did. And like the crotch goes down to my knees or something. Like, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. That's the tough part is trying to these companies to make something that's you're basically making a blanket statement like this is women's, but they're trying to fit a huge spectrum of people in that.
Right.
And it's just really hard.
Yeah, that brings up a really good point is you have to be careful within product development or developing a product in that way. To where you start off with, oh, this would be great for this target consumer. And then as you start developing it, you go, oh, we can just add more people under that umbrella. And then you lose the whole concept and the whole reasoning of why you built that. I've definitely experienced that within product development, which is super frustrating because, you know, you start out of the gate with this is what we're going to do. And then you're like, oh, but we can also add this and this. And then you're really just you're like, so you're coming out of the gate saying it's this, but now it's pretty much the same as everything else. Like you have to be very careful not to do that.
That's interesting. Would that be like, you know, if you go out and you're like, okay, I want to develop this pack that's like for tree stand hunters. Mm-hmm. And then you start adding other things onto it. You're like, well, most tree stand hunters also like to blind hunt. So let's put this on it.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Then, oh, well, sometimes they like to spot and stalk, so let's put this freaking thing on it. And then before you know it, you're like, this is just a backpack.
Yes, that happens. Yeah. I will be the first to attest that happened. So that's why the strategy up front and really identifying this is what is needed, this is what we're going to build, no ifs, ands, or buts, like this is what we're doing. It's really going to help you when you get down the road of execution again in front of the customer. Because then you can tell an authentic story instead of like being like, oh, it started like this. Oh, by the way, it also has this, 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 and this in it. And then a consumer's like, so, okay. Like
now it's way too big for what I need.
And now it is completely not feasible for the tree stand.
Yeah. And I'm at tile zero again. But
yes,
Yeah, that's interesting. That's really interesting. I had a couple questions from Instagram. I think we kind of covered them, but I mean, there was just a couple of them. How do you know if the idea is worth pursuing? At what point do you pop smoke? Like, this isn't going to work.
That's a really good question. That's where, like, just upfront doing it authentically, it's really hard to fail when you do it right in the beginning, if that makes sense. Like, it does. You're kind of doing it because you just feel like it, you're going to hit all those checkpoints, and it's just like roadblock after roadblock if it's not out of the gate authentic. And that's where, like, that why comes into a play. And that's truly within marketing as well. If you don't build that well up front, it's not going to work. And where's the point where it could happen where you're like, nope, that didn't work? I spent a year and a half on a product that was like that. And what happened was, it almost is a blessing in disguise. Like, at the moment where you did your research, you're like, yes, this rifle scope is going to be perfect. It's going to have all these features. But the time frame and working with the manufacturer, and then all of a sudden, like, this time goes by too much to where another brand came out with that and better. And you weigh in your mind, is this product going to now beat this or lose against this competitor? And if a lot of times, if you don't hit that speed to market and do it effectively, you're going to come out with a new product where somebody already beat you at the finish line. And that has happened before. That is one where you want to weigh that early, because of course you'll probably lose a little bit of money, but it's better to probably do that initially than you invest fully on a whole production line or several runs of a product coming out of the gate already probably going to lose the race.
At that point, like, let's say with that rifle scope, this is going to be tricky kind of, but so that the rifle scope that came out, that's basically going to be the same as what you were thinking. At that point, could you shift and say, okay, what I'm going to do is make this more of a budget friendly option?
You can, it is possible. It depends on the relationship you have with the manufacturer. So some manufacturers are very specific in that higher end quality. You really can't make a budget product from them. But if you have a manufacturer that does really well of different ranges of quality, you could possibly be like, you know, that company that's making it for you, or the factory that's making it for you, and they have these other assets within their toolbox. It's like, okay, maybe we can shift this quick. That's never happened in my experience, but I can see that happening. Again, that happens very rarely if you do it right.
Gotcha.
You do it right, meaning authentic, it shouldn't. You should already, and even talking about like other companies or other brands that come out with a product similar, you should also throughout the process within innovation have something that's more of the patent road. So doing something that's uniquely different is where innovation is going to help you be successful. And out of the gate, you should already be protecting that to where nobody should really beat you at it, if that makes sense. It is. I mean, man, we could talk about patents and the legal side and innovation for hours, but that is also a huge thing to take into account. And again, identifying, is this product truly an innovation product, or is this product, something that we're wanting to just better that already is existing, or something that, we see a gap in the assortment and we can really win within this price point and features. So it's a true value. Like, there's different reasons. But patents and definitely innovation should be incorporated, in my opinion, in all of that.
Yeah, it's quite the monster, really. Yeah. When you look at developing a product, it sounds like, I know a guy who's trying to come up with he's coming up with a scope himself, basically. And he was talking to me about some of those patents and some of those things, and it sounds horrible.
Yeah, we had a team specifically for that.
Yeah.
Is when we started, really the first part of the production or the product development stage and you're like, okay, we really want to incorporate this feature, the first thing you do is research who does this. Because that's the last thing you want to do is come out with a product that infringes on something that's super expensive and can tank your brand very quickly. Mm-hmm. But it is a whole different entity and in a very important component within the process as well.
Mm-hmm. So the other question I had from Instagram is choosing a manufacturer. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what angle you want to go on that.
A lot of it. So I'm trying to think how to approach it.
Yeah.
That is a huge component. Let's be real. A huge component within building a product is finding the right manufacturer, is finding a factory that not only can do what you're wanting. So that's a big part. Is a lot of times, it could even be something as simple as a language barrier. It could be something to where, mm-hmm. You have a manufacturer or a factory that's like, oh yeah, we can build that for you. And then they give you a prototype and it's nothing like what you wanted. And those communications were on point, but they just could not provide. And that's time wasted. So a lot of it is truly doing your due diligence up front, figuring out like what they're really good at, what their skill set is, and sticking with that, not trying to make a manufacturer or a factory change who they are to fit you. Mm-hmm. It is going to be a very, very long and hard road doing that. Instead, capitalizing on manufacturers for what they're good at is the approach mm-hmm. that really should be made.
Gotcha.
Easier said than done, of course. But and when you become big and you're a big brand to where you can be like, hey, I want you to build this exactly how I am. I don't really, figure out if you can do it. It should, in my opinion, be the other way around. And this is where I think factories, they do have the potential to leverage their skill set in that way. To be like, this is what we're good at. This is our sandbox. But a lot of times you have those factories that are like, oh yeah, we can do anything because they just want business.
Yeah.
But man, finding those ones that have that good, almost their own, it sounds cheesy, but their own personal brand and know what they're really good at and stick to that. Those are the factories that you really want to partner with.
Mm-hmm. So let's say randomly, like for a tree stand pack, how is that thing coming from one manufacturer? Or are you looking at like a lot of manufacturers to get the components for that?
It would be one manufacturer, and a lot of times manufacturer factory has relationships with, the zipper company, the buckle company, the mm-hmm. fabrics, a lot of times they already have those in play.
Gotcha. Okay. Yep. We touched on optics real quick briefly, and there's not very many optic glass manufacturers, as it turns out. There's a lot of optic companies.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of those come out of the same factory. So yep. Some of those that come out of the same factory, what makes, if it's the same glass, I guess, what makes this company's binocular different than this company's binoculars coming out of the same factory?
Well, that's a very good question. Oh, how to approach this one.
Loaded. I didn't even have that written down. That just came up.
That's a really good question. And a lot of people don't really realize that is you hear people bash talking like, oh, China made whatever. What's the reality is a lot of really, really good optics are made from China glass. And there's a lot of European manufacturers that actually buy China glass. So yeah. I'm gonna throw that out there saying that in my experience, Chinese manufacturers and quality, don't discount them. Like mm-hmm. there's a lot of factories out there that know what they're doing and have very,
Japan,
very good glass.
Japan, I'd say, is the next one.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. So your question back to how, like, really the difference is the brand name.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it really hard from a consumer perspective. Like, and that's where within optics, you have to win in quality and have to be able to show that. or come out of the gate with innovation. Yeah. Because you're just another brand.
Yeah, right? I think the innovation, especially like different reticles or different whatever, like that's really where the difference is made, I think, is like the technology that they come up with and they patent. Right. So then it's theirs.
There are a lot of patents in optics. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Otherwise, from what I understand, it's kind of like a la carte when you're making a scope sort of with a company. It's like, all right, this is glass. This is, you know, what the powers I want it to be. This is, you kind of tell them what you want. And then I think, you know, there's obviously some design and stuff that has to be done on your part.
Yeah.
But I just want to let people know that each one of these companies does not like have their own magic factory somewhere. Like a lot of it's coming out of the same place. So it's just funny to me that like there'll be binoculars that are side by side. People do a review on in comparison and they'll be like, this one is so much better. Like this one is so much better. Like, you know, in your brain, they're the same thing, but it's like people's perceptions a little bit on the brand. So that goes into like building the brand and the whole marketing thing. And I don't know, maybe I should cut this out. I don't know. I'm giving too much.
I don't know. This is, well, and, but one thing you have to take into account too, is when you're building product, you have a price point in mind, meaning we want this, but we can't go over this mark or this budget, because then you're losing profit, right? So, but the more that you add to the a la carte, as you mentioned, like the more cost that goes into it.
Right.
So I will say that even though they can be manufactured in the same place, there is still quality differences. So, and a lot of times that does lead into not necessarily just the lens clarity. You're talking about tolerances. You're talking now about alignment and those things. I mean, you're talking 12 to 18 lenses that are put together in the, you know, precise alignments and are solid, you know, from a tolerance standpoint without any really variations within manufacturing that then lead to quality. So if you are wanting to build something at, you know, this price point, say, and this is a mid-level tier, the same manufacturer can build a higher level tier with possibly, you know, different lens coatings, but higher tolerances or better alignment. You know what I mean? And that's something that really you can tell from a consumer perspective, but it's, we don't educate the consumer on that. We don't show them or tell them, this is what happens, you know, when you have an optical system that isn't aligned very well, or this is what happens when you have an optical system that's, has additional coatings or has these specific ED lenses. Here's your light transmission and resolution differences. No one does that.
Yeah, I don't think so. I learned that you basically can choose like how tight your variation is for your crosshair. Like if it's truly like square, I guess, to the whole thing, you can choose that. So that thing could be 3 degrees off, or if you make it, you're like, this has to be within 1 degree or whatever it is. I don't know, but you can choose that.
So that choosing that is from a price point range.
Yes. That's so, what changes is the price point.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So you can say, I want this precision in this area of the optical system. And that comes at a price versus I want this product with some of these features, build it well. Do you know what I mean? Like, and they can still hit those price point ranges, which is why you have all of these different optical, you know, systems and options in binoculars and rifle scopes and different brands and whatever out there. A lot of times though, it's a very similar optical system to where you're talking more of a brand name versus you're getting more bang for your buck.
Mm-hmm. I see what you mean. So I'm going to ask this question. We kind of already answered it, I think, but when you're looking at a binocular, even from the same company, let's say, that's like, this one is, I don't know, the A1 model, and this one is like the A4 model, and there's a $2,000 price difference in between them, but they're both 10x42s and yep. whatever. What's the difference? Like, what are you paying for?
You're paying for glass quality. So all of those lenses, all those glass lenses that are in that optical system, you're paying for that plus the precision alignment and tolerances.
Yeah. And that really can make a big difference when you're in the field.
Huge.
It can be seen. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'd say like optics is definitely the type of assortment that you get what you pay for.
Mm-hmm.
Now there are some in my old world that we and I was super excited about that. I get excited about products that like are that true value.
Yeah.
And when I mean value, it's not like a crap price and a crap product. I'm saying like, or a good price and a crap product. I'm saying a true value is a really reasonable price. And you're walking out being like, man, like I got an awesome product. And I don't feel cheated.
Yeah.
Like that's the feeling of a true value. And we, there were a lot of optics that, in old world, like we won at, and there's a new company out. I'll just kind of segue into this. Like, yeah. I'm not really wanting to, you know, market too much for this new company, but one that I've seen and actually started connecting with is Astra Optics, which is a new optics company. Now we're sitting here being like, oh, here's another optics company. But what they do really well at is our rangefinders. And rangefinders, you know, you have tons of different features. You have tons of different quality perspectives in there too, not only just from glass alignment, but then you have this whole different component within the ranging capabilities as well. But what Astra does really well, and they're a new company, like I think, like they just launched this past, I want to say 2 months. So they're super new, focusing on rangefinders, but the price of their rangefinders for what you get is stupid good.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is a true value company where they're coming out with products that can target those people that are like, I can't pay $350 for a rangefinder, mm-hmm. but I still would love ballistic, you know, capabilities.
Just something. Yeah.
Like, yeah. So I've been a really big fan of Astra and what they've come out with. And I've actually, like I said, I've connected with them and starting to work with them a little bit as far as product development, product strategy, and even from a marketing perspective. But and I usually don't, you know, hop on board with anybody that I don't like. Like this is
no,
this,
yeah, I know.
Yeah. Like mm-hmm. If I'm talking about it, I truly believe in it. So that's a new company I would definitely keep your eyes out for. And they do a really good job making rangefinders that are at a great price, but you're getting amazing quality.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing too, is they a lot of like, so the customer service side, or at least that you feel like you're being taken care of, that whole warranty side mm-hmm. is huge in optics, right? And that's where, of course, Vortex just kills it. Like, because they prioritize that as far as with their VIP warranty. What was nice to hear is that Astra prioritized that as well. They have a lifetime warranty on their rangefinders, which you don't see very often.
No, because of the electrical.
Right. They're yeah. that confident. And yes, over time, of course, you know, electrical optics are going to, I want to say, wear out, but them just coming out of the gate saying we want to back our product and support our customers with a fully transferable, fully lifetime warranty. That was huge to me too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. I think, especially when you're, it's just like brought up something, having like really believing in what you're doing, I think, you know, that goes back to like on the influencers, you know, a lot of people give influencers hell because they might be using a product because they got it for free, not because they want to use it. I do think it's really important to believe in what you're designing, or having people that believe in what they're designing or believe in the product really goes a long way. And if it's not what you want, or if it's not your thing, then you don't touch it, or don't
put your name on it. Don't associate with
it. Much. I remember one time there was you talked about yoga pants, and I think you called me and you're like, they sent me these pants. They have these pants. I don't think you're going to like them, but let me know. And I looked at him and I'm like, I will never wear that on my body. And yeah.
Did I even send them to you?
I don't think so.
Maybe did you even? Just... I was about to say, I think we hit that checkpoint of we're not even going to put you in this position because we want to stay authentic with this. Yeah, that was, I remember that.
Yeah, just randomly. I don't know. I thought about that. It was kind of funny.
Yeah, but that's a great call out, Jordan. Like, stay true to you. And brands are going to know, they're going to see that. And like, there are so many, I mean, all the brands out there that develop product and people that are involved in product, it's, they truly put their lives into it, you know? And when you have then somebody that is just as passionate about it and able to then share that with others, that's where you get those true influencers and really an authentic team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I really liked about working with you and when we were working together and all that stuff was like, you really had an understanding and loved it and had an understanding for what women were looking for. So when a product came across that was such as that, you're just like, no, no, this is not working. Like, this is not going to happen. No. And moved on from there. So that was, that was cool.
That was definitely hard to do, but yeah, I'm always going to be real. Like you're going to, I'm always going to be real. So,
Awesome. Let's roll into Solitude Boulevard and what you're doing in your own deal when you're not teaching all the sciences. This is so funny. I was talking to her like a few weeks ago and she's like, yeah, I'm a science teacher, you know, went and interviewed for the job. And I'm like, cool, I'm going to be a science teacher now. But what a small town science teacher encompasses is all of it. Like, it's all of the sciences. All of them. Oh, it cracked me up. All the grades, too.
And I'm sure you experienced that because you grew up in a small rural area, right? No, I didn't. Like, that's, I did not understand that. So, I will say I love my job. I love teaching science. I love the students. I learned so much about them. I love the school district. I would have never thought that this was truly my calling. And I think this feeds into as well with Solitude Boulevard is just educating and being passionate about what I, you know, sharing whatever content that is. And luckily science is what I teach because I'm huge into science. I have a lot of experience in science and that, I mean, every day is a great day because I get to share about science. You know what I mean? It's super cool, but it's just super different than what I grew up with. And it was like, you had one science teacher, each year was a different one. And, I get to see my kids every year, 7 through 12, which is super neat. Like, I mean, this will be my third year teaching, which is crazy. Like going into my third year teaching, like, and I see my students and they're already starting to grow, already starting to, you know, really have their personalities and fun, unique selves. Like I love it. It's so fun.
Yeah. I can tell.
Nerding out on it, but
That's fantastic. That does carry over kind of into Solitude Boulevard and what you've got going on. So let's just kind of run through that and what you're doing for people.
Yeah. So last year, I really wanted to focus more on providing resources for women to feel confident in getting outdoors. Like I said, I didn't grow up in the outdoor lifestyle. I had no idea really much about hunting, like how to do it. I didn't know what products I needed. I didn't even know where to go. So those like main barriers. Now fast forward, you know, to today, me being very involved in the hunting lifestyle and knowledgeable and have experience in, I want to share that. And I want to almost remove those barriers, and help people get outside. So I don't like now to say that I only focus towards women because surprisingly a lot of my clientele has been men that really just wanted help finding the right products or wanting a one-on-one or, you know, with their wives, a firearm, you know, safety session. Like I do everything from providing, you know, videos of how to stuff from hunting, fishing, recreational shooting. And also I provide like products recommendations, and I'll go into a lot of my experience has been within obviously product, but wanting to cater these different tiered approaches for customers, being more of the beginner, intermediate, you know, more advanced. And that also translate into price points. So definitely product recommendations is a big component that I have within Solitude Boulevard. And then the other side is the consulting. So I've had a lot of clients that just will call me up and be like, I would like you to just teach me how to do this. So it's a lot of coaching and mentoring of really how to start. Mm-hmm. And, I didn't come out of the gate very bold with firearm stuff and more of the shooting sports. But I've noticed that my customer, my clientele has really been asking for that. Yeah. So I'm definitely going to provide a lot more resources around that as well. But it's been something that I've been super passionate about teaching, educating, mm-hmm. But super passionate about this new lifestyle, that has really become such a huge part of me. But I didn't like that we had these barriers of not knowing what to do, not knowing what you needed, or not knowing where to go. Mm-hmm. I think everybody has the chance to experience the outdoors. And that's what I want Solitude Boulevard to be, to help those people get out there.
Yeah. Because not, you know, just relating it, I guess, to just women specifically, like not everybody is going to have a boyfriend or a husband to take them.
Right.
Or that wants to take them, or maybe they don't even hunt themselves, you know? Yep. So having like some kind of a mentor, I think is really important, and it's hard to find those, especially like you came from Ohio. Right. Like I think a lot of people are kind of in the same boat where they don't really have people to lean on for mm-hmm. that. And yeah, so I think it's awesome.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm super excited about it. And having the summers off and being able to spend more time with my clients, I'm looking forward to. But yeah, in my off time of not helping with product development or teaching, I focus a lot on helping consumers and helping people get out there.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. How do people get a hold of you for that?
So you can reach out to me directly on Facebook or Instagram at Solitude Boulevard, or you can email me at jamie@solitudeboulevard.com.
Sweet. Sweet. And you're around the Nebraska region. Would you call it South Nebraska Central?
Panhandle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Panhandle.
Long I-80 there.
Yep.
Oh, geez. Well, this has been fantastic. Is there anything else you would like to dive into?
No, this has been super fun. Yeah. I have been looking forward to this conversation. Yes. I mean, like I said, and I know your viewers and your listeners are very product people. So mm-hmm. when you called me and you're like, hey, let's talk about product, I was like, let's. And yeah. We could talk about product all day. But one thing I do want to call out, and I think you said this earlier too, is a lot of people give a lot of crap for what people use. And, mm-hmm. You know, like I mentioned, there are people that are brand specific or brand loyal. I'm definitely one of those as well. But I just want to say, let's remember to be kind to one another. Yeah. And if we're outside enjoying the outdoors, whether that be hunting, fishing, recreational shooting, camping, using whatever product, but being ethical, being good outdoorsmen or outdoors mm-hmm. women, like, that's what we should all be cheering on one another. Like, I think the judgment of the types of products that people use, we need to stop doing that. It's about getting out there, and it's about really doing it well and doing it right. And what I mean by that is just being your true authentic self, but being a good outdoorsman. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what products you have. I think if you're outside enjoying it, that's what matters.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we tell people a lot, like, if, you know, if you could buy this expensive product or go hunting, if it's a choice, like if it's what would you even call that? If it's a decision, like, okay, if I buy this product, it's going to be really good and everybody really likes it and whatever, but I am not going to be able to afford a tag, then shift your price point for now.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that, because that's a huge component I have within Solitude Boulevard is when I have those one-on-one calls and discussions with my clients and they're trying to figure out what products they need, it's a matchmaking. Like I almost call it like a product budget matchmaking session. And if you don't do that, if you don't identify what your budget is and what's best for you and your reasoning for what that product is, you're going to purchase something that, you know, could be cool, you know, brand cool or whatever. But if that puts you backwards financially or puts you in a really tough spot to where you can't get outdoor, you can't do the things you want to do because you spent all this money on this one product, like definitely weigh in your mind, like, should you, and don't let others influence that. I think that's why I focus so much on really tuning into what's best for the customer. And I'd say definitely to you guys, everybody, really focus on what you need and don't necessarily think that you need to get the coolest stuff and then be put out financially or in an uncomfortable position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And I really like the be kind to one another thing, because we honestly just, we just talked about it in another podcast, and it was more related towards the whole like public, private, guided, unguided deal. But the reason we're talking about it is because it's a freaking problem.
And it is a problem. Like there's so much judgment. There's so much judgment in the world. And I've seen so much judgment between outdoorsmen. And it's like, why are we doing this, guys? Like we are already in an industry that's struggling. We're already in an industry that, you know, the longevity looks a little scary.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to, sounds cheesy, but we need to more unite and be supportive of one another instead of being judgmental based on what products you use. Like, like if you're out there and being ethical and enjoying life, like awesome. And I think that if we could spend more time telling people that and, you know, good on you, like just that support to one another, I think the better really this industry can become.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I agree. Well, yeah, we're going to have you on again.
I would anytime.
Sure, at some anytime. Point. Even if it's just BSing about stories, just good times we've had.
That's always fun. Yes. No, this was super fun. I'm glad that you reached out and glad you provided the time for me to tell my story and a little bit of the behind the scenes stuff within product development and all that. So I appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that podcast with Jamie. She's super awesome. Can't wait to have her on again and just super knowledgeable. If you like that podcast and you want to hear more kind of similar or like it, let me know. And wherever you're listening to my voice right now, Spotify, Apple Podcast, any of the major platforms, if you want to leave a review, that would be awesome. And it helps us out quite a bit. And yeah, once again, want to thank Onyx Hunt Maps. If you haven't used Onyx yet, you should just go to the App Store, download their app, and play around with the free version a bit. It's really nice. You get to, obviously, you can drop pins. You can customize those pins to any color and any thing that you want them to be, so they're easy to organize. I need to be better about that because right now it's a sea of red X's, but I'm trying to be better about it. You can organize them really easily, and especially when you're in past units, and you can refer back to those, you know, in later years when you end up going back to those units. It's really nice to have everything in one spot. One thing that I really like about their pins, and one of the things you can do with their pins, is attach photos to it. So if I'm in a glassing point, I'm trying to be better about when I'm in a glassing point and I mark that thing down and I'm like, yeah, this is a good spot. I like to take a picture of pretty much all the way around me, like a 360, four pictures. You're going to attach them in there. And then, you know, later on down the road, or when I send them to a buddy and say, hey, this is a good glassing point, go check it out, or, you know, whatever, I can share the pin with them. They can look at it. They can see the pictures that are attached. So they can be like, oh, we can see the hillside that I want to see, or no, we can't, we're going to have to move, or something like that. It's a really good way to gather data and keep it for a long time. So check that out, Onyx Hunt Maps. If you go to their website, you can get a 20% discount on us here at Rockcast Podcast. You have to do it from their website, though. You can't do it from the app. But go to onxmaps.com/hunt, enter code ROCKCAST at checkout, and you'll get 20% off. So thanks again for all the support, and we will see you guys on the next one.